Is it bad that I'm kind of rooting for your MacBook Adorable to just kind of give up one day so you can actually get an appropriate device for your working life? I will not stop bugging you about this.
I know. One day it'll die and I will have like a little funeral and I'll be like, okay, Hattie, I've moved on to the MacBook Pro and you're gonna throw a party.
Okay. We need to get ready for the show, though. So, we need to tell me something fun and positive before we get it all the way started, because I feel like we need to find our energy and not be technically frustrated.
All right. My one fun and positive thing that I have to tell you is that my neighbor across the road, who I just met because I was persistent in saying hello to her every day and now we're friends. I'm making friends. That's a positive thing. But also, this friend that I made, I go over to her house for tea. Hubby, she has ducks. Yeah. And she's going out of town, so I get to be the duck sitter.
Oh my god.
They're just going to be all over my Instagram stories. Oh, she's going to be gone for a weekend, and I'm going to be like Instagramming her ducks.
Oh my god. How many ducks does she have?
I think she has three. I think one of them she may have given to like one of her siblings or something, but so she might only have two, but like 2 to 3 ducks.
Oh.
Very...
So are these like adult ducks?
They are
little baby ducks?
They're adult ducks. And also she has kittens. So she's like, would you mind watching my pets? And I'm like, I would not mind watching your pets at all. Sign me up. I am watching another friend's dogs right now. So I think I'm becoming my neighborhood dog sitter. And I'm like pet sitter. I'm kind of okay with it.
Aww.
I'm kind of okay with
that. That is really cute and also sweet.
What is your one positive thing?
Oh, what is my one positive thing? Oh gosh, I wasn't prepared for this question.
You asked this question.
I'm sorry. To be honest, I'm just happy that we are on recording.
Your positive thing is that we can hear each other.
Yeah, I can hear your voice. You're talking to me about kittens. I'm just getting all of my positive energy from you at the moment.
It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah. Oh my god. No, I my positive thing is that I feel just really happy with my workspace, my co-working space.
Ooh.
There are people there I really like, and I feel like I've got a pretty good setup going. And I was talking to somebody the other day and they like never socialize with anyone they work with.
Oh.
And I was like, wait, what? Isn't it easier for you to do your work if you kind of have a relationship with the other people you're working with? But no, they just didn't do that. So I was like extra grateful when I came into work today and all these people that I like were there, and that made me really happy.
That's amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think social breaks are good for your productivity throughout the day.
Totally.
I find that now that I'm at a co-working space, I'll like talk to people for 5 minutes in the kitchen when I'm getting tea, and I'm like, whew, that was a big break. But it's like it wasn't. It was 5 minutes. But I feel so refreshed afterwards.
Yeah. And there's like a company who works in my co-working space, and I know all of them now, and I hang out with them so much that people sometimes think I work for that company. I obviously don't. And they're so cute because they message me like, hey, sweetie, do you want to do lunch today? Even though I'm like sitting just right next to them. And I wasn't like planning to circumvent their lunch. But I think that's really sweet. I'm also teaching them. So you know how I think people in the UK do quite a lot of courtesy and polite things.
Yes.
And how people in Iceland are not known for this high level of courtesy. But there is like a greeting or a courtesy that we do in Iceland that isn't done here, that I was explaining to the guys, which is after you've had a meal with people, you say thanks for the lunch or thanks for the meal. Not necessarily because they prepared it for you, but just as a like, I'm glad we sat down and shared this meal together and thank you for lunch. And I was trying to explain it to them. And now whenever we have lunch, they always say afterwards like, thanks for lunch.
That's so cute. And I think
that's very cute.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Follow up.
Okay. Are we ready for follow up?
I think so. Last episode, okay. I think our follow up took 26 minutes.
Oh my God. We're getting, I don't know what to say to that.
It's just a lot of follow up. I could be wrong, but I seem to remember because one of my roles is writing down the timestamps that we have in our show notes. And I seem to remember being like, wow, 26 minutes in, we're just finishing up follow up. Here we go.
But to me, that is like almost the beauty of the show. We talk about, we build on the previous conversation, if so to speak.
Yes.
So, yeah, so we have some more follow up.
as is to be expected.
As is to be expected. And I think we wanted to give a shout out to all of the humans who replied to our game from last episode.
Yes. Thank you all so much. It made us very, very happy to see your job description and the tools you use.
Yeah. So for those who didn't listen to last episode, we kind of jokingly, but not really jokingly, so asked people to share on Twitter the job they used only using the tools they use. Am I explaining this properly?
Yeah. So like I would list like Slack, Meltwater, Trello, whatever, and then you'd have to guess what my job was.
Yeah. And then I feel like not everyone understood that everyone could guess. So I feel like we did a lot of guessing. But it was so fun. I loved it.
It was. One of my guesses for someone was that they were a spy. So not all of my guesses were very like, they weren't all like, I know that you're a product designer. Although some people did answer and we did know what they do. So we just sort of thanked them very much for answering. And
oh my gosh.
I mean, it was tough. The people that we knew. But
I was super proud of one guest I got right. I'll find it for the show notes. I can't recall his name off the top of my mind. But his job, he was like launching his own project as some kind of entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And I guessed it based on the tools he used.
Oh, that's amazing. Like, wow. Yeah, definitely find that one. And we'll share the original thread again too. Yeah, we're not going to stop responding to those. So like definitely keep, keep sending them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also noticed like, because people must have just seen it on Twitter in general, like especially people in this kind of productivity kind of crowd on Twitter. I saw some other people just share their top 10 tools that they use, which I thought was like a cool twist on the game. I didn't even think they were listening to the podcast. They must have just seen it here and there on Twitter. And they just did their own spin on things. And I loved that. It was super cool.
It was really cool. Yeah. Shout out to everyone who did that. Thank you. But also just like a general shout out to the people who engage with us on Twitter. We love our Twitter community. Both of us are huge Twitter users. And we do check the Make Work Work Twitter. So we're at MWorkWork. So if you are listening and you would like to get in touch with us or share anything, Twitter is definitely a really good spot for that. We will go through and respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can find all the other links through that, I'm sure, because you know how the internet works, simply if you're listening to this podcast.
We believe in you.
Yeah. Speaking of the internet things, I also randomly, I was inspired, Haley, by our conversation last time where I think I cut it out of the podcast, but we talked about it regardless that you should write about all the books you've been reading and make it like a list for people.
I kind of did like a mini version of that, but yeah, I liked that idea.
Yeah, so you have since actually kind of done that. You wrote a blog post about all your books. We can get to that in a minute, but I was also inspired just to put all the books we've ever mentioned on the podcast on like a bookshelf, virtual bookshelf, obviously, that we're going to link to from the Make Work Work website. Yeah, and I just wanted to tell you all about it because I have definitely been stuck for books sometimes, and it's nice just to see somebody else's lists. Yeah, so we're going to update that as well. So if you just want to look through all the books we've ever mentioned, that will be in the show notes as well.
Yes. So that one's over at makework.work, but also shout out to you, Habby, for creating that because it is beautiful and I love it.
Yeah. I'm glad you like it. I know you have crazy standards when it comes to like keeping it clean.
And yes. This is a behind the scenes debate that we have where I want everything to be really minimal and like super just like structured, I guess. I don't know, like very clean, minimal would be the words that I would use to describe it. And yeah, to my, like, I just redid the design on my website and it's like white. It's just white and black. So I think that just goes to show. But Habby is a little bit more of a colorful person. She wants to add photos. And I think that was like, not that we had an actual argument, but our first ever disagreement about the website is like you were putting photos in and I was like, no, I don't like these. But the bookshelf is very colorful with lots of photos. So this is clearly done by Habby.
Yeah, and I split it into like fiction, nonfiction, and miscellaneous because we have some miscellaneous recommendations that are kind of audiobooks and that kind of thing. And yeah, I'm glad I have my little space to have all my... I think for me, I think maybe I'm just more visual. I feel like when I read websites and stuff, I glance things pretty quickly. So I have like a visual memory, so I kind of like having a little space for that. And I'm glad that's you allowed that.
I think it looks amazing, to be clear. It's not like it doesn't look good. It looks incredible. Okay, one last item of follow-up. This one is yours, Habby. But our last episode, we talked a lot about Trello boards in episode 8, where we went through our writing processes and we both used Trello for it. And yeah. I am not sure what your item is other than Trello boards. So please, please follow up.
Okay, so this is kind of funny because as soon – it wasn't even when I was doing the editing. It was literally during our conversation at the recording last time when you were like – because I know you, Haley, and I know you would never want to be mean to me, but sometimes there's like a little tone. There's a little bit like, that's interesting. And I'm like, uh-oh, this really doesn't like it. Because when I was saying I had the writing and the social media on the same board, you were like, oh, that's interesting. And I was like, oh. And then I was like, why is it on the same board?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm pretty sure instantly the next day I was like, obviously this should be on its own board. So straight after the last episode, I moved all of the kind of posts that were live and published onto their own board. That is called social media, and I've actually been upping the Instagram game and a lot of that for the PermGoGo online presence. And it was really useful to have all the kind of completed posts and in one place, and I could create assets and stuff for the Instagram and the Twitter and everything. So that conversation was actually super practical because obviously it makes way more sense to have it in two different places. So I'm grateful for your tone, I guess.
For my critical tone. I'm sorry. I did not mean – I think for me, I was just – I wouldn't put it in the same place, but that's because I don't do all of that. So then when you said that it was like the all of these responsibilities fall to you – then that made sense. I think in my – I am – the way that my brain works, I just really like to keep things separate. This is probably no surprise to anyone. So I would have them on different boards. I did not mean that you had – I think any way that people want to set up their Trello boards that works for them is wonderful. But I am glad that the new system is working for you. And I have noticed the PromoGoGo Instagram getting more active. So it's working out.
No, it's honestly – as I was having the conversation and you were like, oh, yeah, I would have it somewhere else. I was like, no, yeah, that totally makes sense. I think I said on the last podcast as well that it had been a process to get to this process, which also kind of means I'm also open to develop it further. Yeah. So I'm very happy to kind of take that further. And yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with the Instagram and with kind of there's also like more behind the scenes where I'm working more on making sure that product is consistent with the online presence and with the Instagram and everything, which is super fun work, in my opinion. So that was a change that was supernatural. Oh, also, I wanted to say, because you said you had all your completed posts still on the Trello board you're using for writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this is useful to you, but I just wanted to tell you that for at my work, where especially the most active board by a mile is the development board. And whenever things have gone live, we move them to a different board, which is just called deployed, which just means it's now live and in the world. And it just means we have like an archive of everything that has been done, but it's not cluttering up this space where we're working at the moment.
Hmm.
So I don't know if that would work for you, but we have it in like a time order. So you can go back in time because each column gets like a time frame.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know if that cool. is helpful.
I like using the calendar function a lot. So that's why I leave them on there, so that when I look at the calendar, I can tell, like, was last week a 2-week blog post week? And then the week between that was a 1-week blog post week. But I do, mm-hmm. I do feel like for other boards that are super busy, that makes a lot of sense. We also organize a lot of our work projects using Trello boards. So, like, this could be something. But yeah, I like to use the calendar feature like a little bit too much. Like, I'm always in there just because it's faster. It's faster than going through the blog and searching like, oh, what week was that posted?
Yeah, yeah. No, I just said it because I just know that sometimes having the past and the future, it can make sense to separate that.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to, not necessarily for you, just for anyone, it can kind of make sense sometimes to... if you just want to have the kind of archive accessible, but not in the way of what you're actually doing, you can kind of just move it to its own board. And then you still, like, the all the calendar features and everything hold, even though if it's on a second board. So.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
This feels like a very natural place to start talking about work, because we're already sort of talking about work.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm just going to carry on because I feel like I have...
Yeah, I'm really excited about your first point that you have in here about Chrome.
Yeah, so anyway. I use Chrome for almost all of the work that I do. And I only found this out recently, and I feel a little bit embarrassed, that you can create a multi-persona in Chrome. Are you familiar with this feature, Haley?
Yes. It's very exciting. Yeah.
So... okay, so I'm just going to lay out my own life and so that it makes sense to everyone, where I have my own self. I have my own email address. I have like my own Twitter account. I have banking and all this kind of other stuff I log into. And then I have, for PromoGogo, I obviously have my PromoGogo email address. I have Twitter accounts. I have lots of social media accounts. I have lots of just random accounts that are PromoGogo accounts. And then I also have Make Work Work accounts. Haley and I use Google Drive to organize the show notes. We have a Twitter account. We have a social account. And it's just quite a lot of logging in and logging out. And I don't know why I didn't realize that you can create like a persona in Chrome for each of these identities, if that makes sense. And... actually, I was super impressed. I just set up today. So up until this point, I had used Chrome for basically everything. And then if I needed to log into a secondary anything, I would use it in Safari. But I don't really like Safari. So it was nice to be able to set it up on Chrome. And especially today when I was doing a lot of make work, work, work with preparing the show and everything, I could have all the show notes and everything open in one window. And then I could still have all my normal work open in a different window, and I was logged into different accounts on that window.
I love that. And I think this is especially like helpful because if you are a person that uses more than one Google account, you know that Google does not play nice with you trying to be logged into many of their accounts at once. Like, I can't tell you how many times I try just to go between like my personal Gmail and my work email, which is also hosted through Google. And it just logs me out of everything. Like, it's like, we're broken here. We can't do this. And I'm like, oh, that's no.
This is actually why I tend to use the mail client just for everything, because to me, when I'm doing email, I just want to deal with all of it at once. And I don't want to have to log in and out of things. It just drives me crazy. Even though that means I also have to deal with all the kind of newslettery type of things, which I know Gmail filters out for you. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? You saying this, I'm realizing I used to do Chrome multi-persona. And I don't anymore. I don't know why. I have been having a little bit more luck. I'm going to break it. And now after this episode, I'm going to have to go create one. But I've been having a little bit more luck, knock on wood, with my stuff not being logged out. So that has been great. But the one time I noticed it is a little while ago. And if you were on Twitter, you would have noticed this. But Slack was broken. Slack was broken.
I remember that day.
Yeah, and Twitter had a meltdown, myself included, to be totally honest.
It was like, Slack down for 1 hour, 40,000 tweets.
Okay, come on. It was more than an hour. We were talking about a really long time. But it was...
No, I meant after 1 hour.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's accurate. That is 100% accurate. And one thing that we did at my work is we all still needed to communicate with each other. So we set up Google Chat.
Oh my God.
Right? Like, what is this? The Ice Age? This was really bad. So we set up Google Chat just because it was the only other tool that we have. And ever since then, we actually have more contingency plans in case of tools going down, which is really funny. But that's a total side note.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So we created Google Chat and I got the email saying like, hey, your work has created a chat. Join here. And I couldn't join. Like, it wouldn't let me join. And then someone followed up with the email and said, if you're logged into multiple Google accounts, like, here's the little hack you need to do in your URL where it might say, like, it might be a / U1. And that means you're user one and you might have to change it to, like, U2. And I did. And then I could get in. It took me, like, 45 minutes to get into Google Chats. So I was like, at this point, I'm just trying to get in touch with my colleagues that I have calls with. It was – like, I could have just sent them emails. But it was really funny. So this is my most recent example of Google not playing nice with each other. So I feel like I should set it up again. But I just like you saying this, I'm realizing I used to have multiple Chrome personas and – I just haven't. I would be curious to hear from our audience, too, if they have this set up.
I feel like this is – I don't know if this is a new feature, but I feel like it's a pretty hidden feature. I just heard about it on a podcast. I don't know how I would have come across it otherwise. So now I'm paying it forward. Now I'm telling anyone who's listening about it so they can do it if they're so inclined. But, I don't know. But then again, did I ever read the instruction manual on Chrome? Like, no.
Does it come with an instruction manual?
I'm sure it does. But
oh my gosh. Chrome hacks. That's like our next show. Except this is the only one we have.
Yeah, this is the only one.
Maybe in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about multiple personas because a big conversation that we were having at work a couple of weeks ago was around disconnecting from your devices when you're on vacation, and like more specifically disconnecting from your work when you're on vacation, because there are ways to like enjoy having a device with you when you're on vacation. And one of the things that one of my colleagues recommended was to create a separate iOS account. So I would have like work Haley and personal Haley. And when I'm on vacation, it would be all different apps. Like Slack wouldn't even be there. You know, like it would be essentially the same thing, except like I feel like it's a little bit more of an extreme level to have like a different iOS persona. So I just wouldn't be logged into all of the work things. So that was – I thought that was interesting just while we're on the multi-persona topic.
I find this endlessly interesting. And I've actually been thinking about this because I got a new phone from work, but I still have my old phone. So I actually have two phones.
Don't you mean three?
Oh, I probably have more. But I have two phones.
I know you used to have two phones. So if you got an additional one, unless you got rid of one, I am positive you now have three. I'm sorry.
I probably have more.
Go on. I just want to make sure that people know that two is not the extent here.
I have two that have SIM cards in them and occasionally do get used. But I have thought about this. Like, would it make sense to do this? You know how obsessive I can get about my home screen?
Oh my goodness.
On my iPhone. I've actually been playing around with it recently, and something that I did, which I've never done before, which is I always used to have all of my apps just on the first page. So if you can't swipe to the right because there's just nothing there. because I just thought it was more clean that way. But now I've been playing around with it a little bit, and I decided to try a new change where I have everything that is somebody talking to me is on the second page. So I don't see any notifications when I open my phone.
Okay. I have so many thoughts. I'm just waiting for you to
finish,
so, because I will derail us.
Okay, so I just want to make sure it's super clear. So like the first page is like the apps that I use the absolute most. And just from memory, it's something like OmniFocus, Spotify, Overcast, Kindle, Instagram. I have no notification on Instagram, so I still have to go into Instagram. And some work apps and everything. And then if I swipe to the side, that's where I have WhatsApp and iMessage and Facebook Messenger and Slack and the kind of people are talking to me apps. And I don't know if this is going to be like my permanent system, but I've been playing around with it and it's doing wonders for anxiety things. And also with me being like more active on all the Instagrams and everything, I'm using my phone quite a lot for work. So I've been planning out the grid, using an app called Preview. I obviously like post the photos on Instagram through my phone. I've been using Buffer on the phone. So if I reach for the phone to do some work, I don't want to see everyone who's trying to reach me. Because I kind of get distracted by that.
Yeah, of course.
So I know you're interested in like home screen developments. So yeah, I've just been playing around with it. What are your thoughts?
Okay, you hold on. Wait, just to relate this to the fact that you have two phones, is it what you're considering is putting two things on two separate phones? Is that?
Yeah, so I had this thought that maybe I should have like a work phone and a personal phone. But I'm kind of coming to the conclusion that I hate having to charge two phones.
Yeah. And
the reason I have two phones is because I need to log into my internet banking in Iceland with my Icelandic phone. So that's why I have that around. But I only do that pretty infrequently. And I always forget my phone or it's not charged.
I have mailed you that phone in other countries because you've left it at my place.
Exactly. I'm not good with the two phone lifestyle. One phone is enough.
Oh my gosh, you're so funny. Okay, so I just wanted to relate the two before we get like yeah, totally sidetracked. I totally agree, one phone is enough.
Yeah.
Okay, I have some thoughts. I'm just going to list them and you can respond in whatever order that you would like. Okay. First of all, when did you turn notifications back on your phone? You used to never have badges. So that's my first one. It's because you're making it seem like you would see all the notification badges. So, okay. Curious about that. And also curious about this switch to having the ability to swipe to the right, because you and I have both been obsessed with the single home screen for a very long time.
I know. This is really dramatic.
This is this is really emotional for me. I feel like all the things that I know that are true are not true.
I think it has something to do with the notification center on, you know, you swipe down and you see all your notifications.
Yes.
I'm kind of guesstimating here, but I think what started to happen was it was being inconsistent, because I liked seeing the notifications that I had to be able to refer back to them, but it wasn't being consistent. And then also I've been really into just batching projects. So sometimes I'm like replying to something and I'm like, okay, now I'm in communication mode. I better just get back to every message that I have.
Yeah.
And then actually it does make sense just to see the badges, because then you don't have to check every single app. You can just respond to, you know, the actual messages that you actually have. So I moved all the communication to the second page and I turned on the red badge that I hate. And actually, like, it's kind of nice. I'm still not hugely satisfied with the system, but it is working for, like, whenever I open my phone, I see no messages, and that's really nice, because almost every message I get, even like a personal friend message, is just some kind of request, and I almost have to have my calendar open.
Oh gosh.
Every time I get a message. So
yeah,
quite often, like, I don't want to deal with anything unless I have my calendar open and I can agree to a commitment or say, no, I can't make it, or make a second commitment. And it's just open stressing me out so much. So I was like, let's just move all of this away from my sights.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like I'm even hesitant, like when I know that someone has asked something of me, let's say like on Facebook Messenger, I don't mm-hmm. even open the app until I know I can respond to them so that they don't see that mm-hmm. I've been online. So it just, oh my gosh, until I know I can answer them. But then I will use Messenger when Messenger gets a little crazy. I won't even use it on my phone. I will use it on the web, and then I will filter by show me only my unread messages, and then I'll just power through all of those. So this is mm-hmm. this is definitely a challenge. I totally agree. But I am excited. We're going to have to follow up with you again to see if you keep doing this, because this is something I'm very interested in.
Yeah, no, I'm still in progress. I'll figure this out. Oh, also, not everyone seems to know this, so I just wanted to say this. You know, if people use Facebook Messenger to you and you don't like the tiny little windows that come from like the top down part of the browser window, if you're on your laptop, you can actually go to messenger.com, and there you have all your messages in full screen and not in tiny little annoying windows.
Oh yeah, that's where I use it.
Yeah, I trust me, I see people in my co-working space all the time and they're like hunched over looking at the tiny little window.
Oh goodness.
And I don't feel like I should be like, psst, use messenger.com, but...
Hey, it might be welcome. It might be welcome. Messenger.com is what I use, because that's how I do the, like, filter by unread thing is all through messenger.com, because it's so much easier. Okay, actually, speaking of our phones, I deleted Facebook from my phone.
That's good. I'm proud of you.
It's been good. It's been really good. Yeah. If you want to get in touch with me, definitely don't write on my Facebook wall. Not that anyone does that.
I feel like I use Facebook because I have to, but besides that, I don't check it. I feel like it just doesn't even hold my interest anymore.
Same.
It's just uninteresting.
I am on the exact same page. I do not, and I have for months now, I have not enjoyed using Facebook. And like, I think it shows. If you go to my profile, it's like mm-hmm. stuff that other people have tagged me in. I don't really post. I don't know. And I deleted it from my phone. I'm just not on there.
I actually had, I don't know if, yeah, I think I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but I think I told you about this like lady who I knew professionally who kept tagging me and 99 other people in something.
Oh, goodness. No thanks.
And it was... Oh my God, it was so bad. It was so bad. And because it was like a professional contact, I felt really bad about it. And then it was so persistent, I ended up unfriending her because I just could not deal with it. And I don't even feel bad about it. I was like, no, do you know what? This is invasive. This is not how you promote anything. This is
That is not a good strategy. If anything, that'll be worse for your Facebook posts, because Facebook will see that you mentioned people and they ignored it.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, I am totally. And then I feel like I get a lot of creepy messages and friend requests on Facebook. And I just don't get that on other social networks. And I post a lot on Twitter. Like I'm on Twitter all the time and I don't get creepy messages, which is wonderful. Or even on Instagram. I don't even get creepy messages on Instagram, which is lovely.
No, I don't get. I don't think I get. No. I like Twitter. I like Instagram. And that's basically it. And it's also like, to me, Twitter DMs and Instagram DMs, like no one messages me anything serious on there. It's just like, oh, your story looked pretty today. Or, oh, you were doing this. How fun. It's not, okay, we need to put a date in the calendar for this thing. Like it's all just fluff. So I can just ignore it and then read it whenever I feel like it.
Yeah. That's totally valid. I've had some people try to send me serious messages and Twitter DMs for like requests for information and stuff like that. And like a month later, I'm like, oh my goodness, here's my email address. Like, I'm like, please just email me or like tweet me and ask me for my email address if you're going to ask me something serious or like work related. Because if it like I don't know, I just don't get Twitter DM notifications. Or sometimes I look at them and then I do the thing where I look at it and I'm like, oh, I can't give them an answer right now, so I'm not going to read it. And then the little blue thing that tells you on Twitter that you haven't unread disappears, and then a month later I check it again and I'm like, I never got back to that person. Okay. Speaking of apps that we use,
mm-hmm.
you have an app that you used to use pretty obsessively. And thanks. I've seen you, and then also speaking of Twitter, I've seen you tweet these people to be like, what's going on? And to no avail, to no avail. Tell the people.
Oh my God. So I feel like I have to begin in a little bit further past, because as some of you may imagine, I work as a product manager for a marketing product. So some little development called GDPR took over my entire life for about 6 weeks minimum. And I went from being, this is really big and scary, to being like, wait, oh, they just don't want anyone to abuse personal data. This actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
To being actually kind of excited to just personally get cleared of all these products. I once downloaded their app or something.
Yeah.
So I had like a journey with my GDPR I got to this, and I heard crazy stories, like back in Iceland, companies were charging other companies something like £7,000 per day to ensure GDPR compliance.
Whoa.
And I was like, this is really not that complicated. But people get really scared when you put words like day fines and stuff in there. So people were really scared. And I was kind of gleeful about this whole development, because I was like, no, as long as your business is legitimate and you don't sell people's information, you're probably fine. And people know what your business does and they agree to and all that. And so I was kind of gleeful when May 25th or 26th rolled around. And I saw everyone on Twitter complain about all these like swaths of emails about like, oh, are you sure? Like, you don't want to, you know, stay with us forever. And all these like desperate marketing emails. And I was like, okay. But then on the day, I went to save an article I wanted to read later in my Instapaper, which is one of my favorite products. I have included it on a list somewhere of like my favorite products of the year, whatever. And what does Instapaper tell me? They're like, due to new European Union regulations, we're no longer serviced in Europe. And that was it. And oh, I was like, man. What do you mean, Instapaper? What have you been doing with my data? So abusive that you can't freaking get around this regulation. Like, are you? And the thing is, I've been with Instapaper for so long that I was with them when they were new and when I had to pay for them to go premium, and then they got sold to someone and so their premium became free again. And I was with them through all of that, and I would pay for Instapaper. I would totally do that. I love it. I love how it's so clean and how it's so easy to use and how it keeps track of loads of references I need. And I think I even said on the last podcast how I had it filled to the brim with all sorts of references and notes and highlights and everything. And they don't care about me, Haley.
Oh, no.
They don't care about me. And I felt really heartbroken. So I took to Twitter, which is what I do when I'm heartbroken. And I said, dear Instapaper, can you please sort out your GDPR compliance? I know people in Iceland who you can pay £7,000 a day to make sure you're compliant. Also, I can do it for you for way less, but whatever. But please just reply to me. And people like were retweeting and they were sharing, and then I started getting then like I heard nothing from them, nothing. And then weeks passed, Haley, weeks. And then I started to get personal messages like, hey, Abby, what happened to Instapaper? Do you know? And I was like, no, I don't know, because they don't care about me. They don't care about my country. They don't care about my continent that I live on.
Oh, they're my like, goodness. Nah,
I can't put like a single product manager on sorting out this freaking consent form that I have to do, and then everything is fine. And I'm really sad, Haley.
I know. And I feel bad too, because I am not in the EU. So you got me onto Instapaper and I'm really loving it now. So what? Okay. I have like two questions for you. One, mm-hmm. if you used a VPN, would you be able to trick Instapaper and use it again? And two, and VPN is virtual private network. So you could use a VPN to like tell your computer that you're actually in Canada, for example. Everyone loves mm-hmm. Canada. And they would just let you use Instapaper. And then my second question is, what is there a way that you've exported your notes, or like what have you done with that? Have you just lost all of that information? Because now I keep notes in there that I reference.
Exactly. And okay, so I feel like when you have a heartbreak, you can't instantly move on. You have to acknowledge the heartbreak and you have to allow some time to grieve.
Okay.
And then you have to slowly accept that this is now the new reality, and you have to learn to live with it. You'll never truly get past it. You just have to learn to live with it. And so today I was going through some of my notes, and I found this like guy who I wanted to check out later, and I wanted to put some of his articles into my Insta paper. And of course, it wasn't there. It didn't work for me. So today, this very day, I finally decided to delete the Instapaper Chrome extension and add the Pocket Chrome extension, and I set a Pocket on my iPhone. And so now I'm changing into Pocket. But there is a little caveat to this, because Instapaper actually still seems to work on my phone, which I don't really understand how they do that. So I feel like they're not even consistent with their own. We don't like your rules, European Union, but whatever. Maybe they think the European Union doesn't know about iOS or something, but so it still works on there.
At least you still have some access to it.
Yeah, but I was actually listening to Cortex, which is like our favorite podcast, and I was so behind, so I had to like catch up, so I've been like binging it a little bit. And one of the hosts, Gray, he had been going through some crisis with his to-do list apps or whatever. And he was saying how sometimes actually it's good to just start with a clean slate. And if something is important enough, you remember it. And if it is important enough, you can also just find it again and extract that. So I feel like I'm not going to export all of my Instapaper notes into Pocket. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I need it, I can go find it. But I'm using this as an opportunity to just like let go of some old references and old articles that I just may not need to use again.
It's a very healthy outlook.
Well, thank you. No, so I just wanted to say, what's your, because you obviously probably use something to save articles, right?
Now I'm using Instapaper. I used to use Pocket. Pocket is great also, but I sort of ran into the same problem as you. I have like a ton of articles in Pocket, and I'm just like, okay, Instapaper is my start over. So we're kind of doing the opposite thing. But I've also been using, just like while we're on the topic of apps for reading articles, I've also been using Flipboard a lot. So I don't know why I wasn't on board the Flipboard train before, but I've been on there, and that has been where I've been finding all of the best articles recently. I feel like I find a lot of stuff on Twitter, but this is just like super tailored to me, and it's been really helping me like fill up social media queues with interesting articles, because they just find so much awesome stuff. So I've been using Instapaper to save things that I want to highlight notes in, but I've also been using Flipboard now to find
those articles. So wait, I feel like I don't even know Flipboard. Can you explain the app to me?
I don't know if I can, because I just figured it out like this week. But okay, so I will do my best. Flipboard is, it kind of feels like an online magazine. I might be getting that from their marketing. But essentially you go on there and you're like, okay, I'm interested in travel and finance and books and, you know, whatever else it might be. And they curate stories from like everywhere on the internet into those categories for you. And it's just really, really easy to find high quality content in the topics that you're interested in. So I said online magazine, but I think maybe it's more like a news aggregator is probably the better term for it. So they're not creating content. Like there isn't like a writer at Flipboard that's writing this. They're finding it all over, like whether it's Business Insider or The Verge or TechCrunch, and they're putting that stuff in the right categories for you. So it's nice, because I go to Flipboard and then it does like the cover stories, which highlights everything you follow. But then you can go through, and if I want to look specifically at books, or if I want to look specifically at personal finance, I can see all the top articles there. So I have been doing a lot of Flipboard reading. It is, in fact, one of the bookmarks that I save in Chrome now.
Oh, cool. Actually, since we're just on that topic of like, how do you find articles? Because Instapaper is obviously to store articles you've kind of already found. It doesn't really find them for you. And just since we're on the topic, I just want to say I get a lot of that through email lists that I'm on.
Yeah.
Which I know is probably not the optimal way, but I feel like whenever I try to go to my email, I'm actually like, no, this is valuable. I'm on lots of industry email lists, and you get, there's also a service I just want to give a little shout out because I really like it. It's called Blendle. Have you heard about it?
No, I haven't. Is that, how do you spell that?
Blendle. So it's B-L-E-N-D-L-E.
Okay.
Blendle.
Okay.
And it's a Dutch company, and they are basically to news what iTunes Store was to music at the time.
Oh.
So basically what they're doing is they are taking like the best articles, like the kind of proper news organizations who've obviously been struggling with their business model and all that. And they're taking New York Times and Washington Post and all these like good, solid news, actual news kind of, you know, organizations. And you get email lists based on your interests. And then if you see an article that you like, you pay for it, like 40 pennies or cents or whatever. And if you don't like the article, you can get your money back.
Oh.
But it's just a way of supporting journalism. And like for me, I think it's pretty important to have journalists who are doing good work. So I don't mind. I just put like £5 or £10 or dollars or whatever on it. And because you don't actually end up reading like 20 articles a day. You know, if you're reading one really good quality article, you know, that's kind of it. Like you're not going to read 20 in a row. So you don't actually end up spending that much money on it. And I think it's just really important to support journalism, especially in our time.
Yeah. That's a very good, cool app. Good shout out.
Mm-hmm. So I recommend them. And also I emailed them and I said, I love your product and it's really cool. And they replied and they invited me to visit their offices in the Netherlands if I was ever there.
Oh,
so that
wow.
was kind of cool.
Okay, trip to make work work trip to the Netherlands.
Yeah, so I don't know if that offer still stands. It was a while ago, but that was pretty cool of them.
That's amazing. Okay,
okay.
We have gone all over the place.
We have gone all over the place.
And we've been recording for like an hour.
Holy shizzles. Do you want to go on to our big and complicated topic, or do you just want to keep chatting about whatever?
Oh, I don't know. I was going to say let's do imposter syndrome.
Okay, let's do it. How do you want to tackle this?
That's a good question. From the lift. I don't know. I don't know.
That's what Beyonce said. I just said to the left. I was like, okay, so do you want me to start us off and then you can tell me what you think and then we can talk about it?
Sure, yeah. And
Or do you want to start us off and then I'll kind of build on it?
Sure, okay.
I think I'm ready. Yeah.
Okay. So last episode, episode 8, we sort of in the middle of talking about books stumbled upon this super huge topic about really imposter syndrome and how I was only able to read as many books as I've read so far this year because I've opened up to myself the fact that I like reading fantasy and YA and fiction, and I used to not do that because I was worried what people would think. So that is something that we recognized in the last episode. We had so much to talk about that. And since the last episode, I have not been able to stop thinking about it. And I know that you have a lot of information on this too, Happy. So let's talk about imposter syndrome today, since it's a huge topic that we kind of just only like scratched the surface of last episode.
Yeah. So I've kind of been thinking about this a lot just because I feel like I'm lucky enough to have people call me out on imposter syndrome when I do it, which is kind of like what I did to you mid-episode. So I'm sorry about the drama.
No, but it was good. It was needed. I was also recognizing it in myself, so I feel like you were like naming the action, right?
But I just want to like give you so much like props because you have since written that blog post where you like almost like decloset yourself of your fantasy reading, which I just love. And
thank you.
I feel like this is my kind of impression. It's like you're able to just run with it and like nothing is holding you back. You're just doing whatever you want. And you're doing like, what, last time I saw you've written like, no, read 67 books this year, which to me is, that must be some kind of record, honestly. And you wrote a blog post that I love. It was like you through and through. It made me smile like 5 times when I read it. You like redid your whole website and you just like, I feel like you just owned everything about yourself. Like not in a, I have to apologize for myself way, but just in like a, this is who I am kind of way.
Thank you.
And I just thought that was amazing.
Well, I really appreciate it. Our, it was so wild how that sort of just like happened in the last episode. And what's really funny is that, so we started talking about the kinds of books that I like and how I was being sort of private about those books before, but now I'm all dragons and magic and that is exactly what I like listening to. Give me some sorcerers any day. And right after that episode, even before that episode was live, I think, or maybe just after that episode came out, I was watching one of like someone that I follow on Instagram, and she actually works at Instagram as their director of partnerships. She did a quick IGTV video, because this was right when IGTV came out, about how she loves YA books. And in fact, her favorite book series is one of the ones that I listed in my blog post. And then I got an email from one of the authors that I follow, one of the like indie Amazon authors.
Did you?
Well, it wasn't like just to me, it was like a newsletter. But she was explaining that there's a YA book club that they created like for fantasy readers on Facebook. And I was like, okay, my imposter syndrome was so that I didn't want to join the thing. I didn't want to join the group initially when I got that email, but I had opened it on my phone, so I just kept the Safari or the Chrome tab open for like weeks. Mm-hmm. And after that episode, I was like, it's time. And I just joined the group because I was like, you know what, whatever. And I've had some great book recommendations, but also I'm not the only adult in that group. So I just think since I've said that, I've realized more and more that although I thought it was a big deal and I kind of thought I was like maybe alone in my corner being weird, as soon as I was open and honest about it, even though I wasn't necessarily like, these aren't people that have heard my story, but like seeing more people being honest about it in the last little while has been super cool. And then also I've had some people tweet me because I shared that article and let me know that YA is their favorite genre and fantasy is their favorite genre also. So yeah, it has been really cool to see how this has gone well. And I was nervous about all the things, and I didn't need to be nervous about them.
But I think this is exactly what happens, is like we feel nervous. Yeah, because it's hard to say something that you feel like, whether that's true or not, but if you feel like you're kind of separating yourself from the pack in whatever way, it's just hard. And I think one of the best things you can do is just recognize that it's hard. And then you can kind of make a decision from there. And yeah, I think it's so cool. You've been seeing all this amazing feedback from it. And I love your new website and I love your blog post. Thank you. And it just made me super happy to see all that.
Thank you. Another thing that has happened is that I was like very open about books, but that's sort of like spilled over to the rest of my life. So ever since I've been honest, not only with myself, but honest with like the rest of the world about the kinds of books that I've been reading, I feel like my attitude has been very much like, this is what I like, or this isn't what I like, or I'm just going to do what I want. Like, this isn't a podcast about wardrobe, but this is still very relevant. When I was always nervous about what I would wear and what people would think, because I was too worried about what others might be thinking and also what others might be wearing. So I live in small town Colorado. I mean, it's not that small, but I live in a smaller town in Colorado and everyone wears jeans and a t-shirt and a hoodie. And that's totally fine. That is what people wear. If you have met me in person, I did not own jeans for years. I only bought jeans because I lived here. And so I started trying to dress like everyone else just because I didn't want to stand out. And recently I've just been like, ever since I've been honest with myself about the books I want to read, I've been more honest myself about what I want to wear. And I'm very much a skirts person. I love wearing skirts. I like wearing dress shirts. I mean, when I'm working, I just want to wear yoga pants and a tank top. But the rest of the time when I leave home, I like wearing dresses. And I've started just wearing what I want to wear because it doesn't matter what all these other people that live in Colorado think of me. And I've been a lot more confident since I've been open with myself. So I feel like it's really changed my attitude and like my confidence levels to be honest about this one small thing about myself. And it's like totally spreading to other areas in my life. And I'm just feeling more confident as a human.
That is amazing. It is so amazing. And it makes me so happy. And it's so cool. I'm so glad you feel this like difference, because I think it's really common if you're skilled at something, your natural instinct is to kind of doubt yourself. And I think it is just such a huge step to be able to do like, no, I did that. Like, I can own that and I can be proud of that. And it doesn't have to make me super arrogant and annoying. It can just be something that I know. And if people want to ask me about it, I can talk about it, but I don't have to like push it in the face or anything like that.
Yeah. I love that. And you were kind enough to send me some of your notes about imposter syndrome before this episode. Which is very nice of you. And I like wanted to highlight things. And so just related to what you were just saying, one of the things that I sort of like took out of that document that I thought was really good is you wrote, stress seems to have some kind of opposite correlation to skill and ability.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought yes. was really powerful. Like, I do think I know a lot of people that are very stressed, but they're really amazing at what they do. And it's just like, they're stressed because they care, and they're stressed because they're worried that what they do won't be good enough. But at the end of the day, like, they got to where they are because they're so skilled and talented.
Yeah. And I think like, I just remember this so well when I went to like a super, super nerdy school, and there were like all these girls, somehow there was always girls who were so annoying because they were always freaking out about every single exam, and they did super well at every single exam.
Hmm.
But I think you get stressed because they only got good grades because they really studied and they really worked hard. And it's really disappointing if you've put your heart and soul into something and then it doesn't work out. So I think like that's where the stress comes from. It comes because you've put so much of yourself into something. And if you kind of get like a rejection on that, or you fail, or something bad happens, it's way harder when you've already put yourself all the way out there, but you may get the good results because you put yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that totally makes sense.
And I've heard this quote for like parenting. I don't have kids and Hayley doesn't have kids, but I've heard this for parenting where if you're worried about not being a good parent, you probably already are a good parent.
Yes, I've heard that too, and I love that. That's okay. That's advice that I got from someone that I go to for PR mentorship, and I was asking him about creating a PR strategy, and I was mentioning how worried I was that I wasn't going to create a good strategy, and he was like, the fact that you are so concerned with creating this strategy document that I was working on at the time means that it will probably turn out. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, he hadn't even seen it. He was just like, I can tell the level of interest and passion that you're going to put in, that you are trying to put into this. And because of that, it's probably going to work out.
Yeah. And because, like, you're probably not going to do everything 100% perfectly, but like, that's not even the point. Like, you can only get further by trying as much as you can. And then you go from there. Like, you can then be like, oh wait, no, I didn't account for this, and then you account for that next time, you know. Like, I feel like sometimes we have this idea in our brain where we're going to do everything perfectly 100% the first time we try it, which to me is like crazy. Like, no, you just have to first give it everything you've got and then see where it takes you, because you never know where it's going to take you.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about that. Yeah.
I like that. We also sent out a tweet before this episode asking people for their like thoughts and questions and stuff like that on imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. So I want to share a couple. One thing that we got was an article from a think she's an editor of a UK tech publication, and her name is Yessi Bello Perez. I'm just going to read one quote. She wrote this wonderful piece about feeling like a fraud when you work a successful job, and one of the quotes is, "That's the thing about imposter syndrome. It's irrational and it can affect anyone." So I think one of the things about imposter syndrome is like you're definitely not alone. I think that's one of the things that it makes you feel like. You feel like you're alone and you're the only one that feels this way. But as soon as you start talking to other people, as soon as we start talking about it with each other, you realize that most people are dealing with something like this, or like at least there probably is someone else who has dealt with similar emotions that you can go to for support or, you know, share experiences with. So I think that's one thing about imposter syndrome.
Yeah. And to me, okay, so a big part of my notes was this. If you float around these kind of circles on the internet, you may have seen this, but there was this big piece that got published, like a, what do you call it? Like a research paper that got published, which was kind of like a landmark piece, I think, because it talked about how the incompetent are unaware, no, how the unskilled are unaware. And so it was this piece that said how like people who are not good at something also don't recognize their lack of skill. So if you're skilled at something, you not only now have that skill, you're also aware of what it takes to be good at it. And so if you're not skilled, you almost have this like double curse, because not only do you not know what you need to know to have the skill, you also lack the skill to be self-aware enough to recognize your lack of skill. And this is like the perfect irony of the world. This actually sometimes comes out as arrogance, because people are like, oh yeah, this, you know, jiu-jitsu, I mean, how hard can that be? It's like, no, it's really freaking hard. But so they go through this hierarchy where there's kind of two levels of like, first, you are either skilled or you're not skilled. And then secondly, you're either aware of how good or bad you are, or you're not even aware of it. And then there's like this learning curve that happens. So let's say I start doing jiu-jitsu tomorrow. I don't know anything about it. So I'd be like, oh, how hard can I, even though now I'd be absolutely terrified. But let's say I'd be like, oh, I mean, how hard can it be? You just like roll around in your little suits and stuff. And then I would go to like, let's say for 2 weeks, I would go to these practices and I would progress because I was like doing the practices. But my awareness of what it takes to be skilled would go up. So I would actually feel way worse about my skill.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So like, because you understand better what it takes to be good, even if you technically are better, you feel way worse. Like way worse. And then when you're learning something, you just have this journey of like frustration and small wins and like chaos, and you do little things and you're like, you get better and you get worse. And it's just like, you don't learn a new skill, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu. It could be baking, or it could be singing, or it could be performing or whatever. But because you don't magically suddenly get amazing, you forget your process and your progress. And you think you've been, like, you're just kind of unaware of how much better you're getting because it isn't linear. And then what happens, this is all based on this like research, and there are loads of videos actually about it. And there's one in particular that TEDx, you know, the YouTube.
Yeah.
Like TEDx is obviously the famous one. And then they have like a smaller YouTube channel, which is called TEDx. And they actually did a video that's really good, and I'll link it in the show notes, about this very phenomenon. And so what happens is, when you get really skilled at something, you know the field so well, you actually become aware of all of your knowledge gaps. So you don't really get that feeling of like, no, I know this really well.
Yeah.
Because you see all the things that you still don't know, and you haven't perfected this one thing. even though if you would compare it to like the day you walked into the jiu-jitsu studio, you're obviously like way better. But because now you've met people who are like best in your city or best in your state or whatever, you kind of haven't readjusted back to what's normal.
Yes, this is so real. This is so real. Like, just using the jiu-jitsu example, I feel mm-hmm. like I go into the gym to train and I'm like, there are five belt levels, the fifth being black belt and the first being white belt. So I'm the second. And so I feel all the time like I'm I know nothing. Like, you know nothing, Jon Snow is like my life. So I feel like I go to jiu-jitsu and I'm like, I don't know how to do all this stuff. But then I'll meet people who just start and then I realize how much I know when I'm teaching them those things that mm-hmm. I already know. Or if like the average Joe on the street or Jane probably does not know as much about jiu-jitsu. But I've been doing it for years. But yeah, it's very true. I think the way that you phrase this in your document, and this is again one of the things that I highlighted, is that experts don't make this mistake. Or hold on, wait. The mistake that experts make is overestimating how much everyone else knows and devaluing their entire domain of expertise.
Yeah, no, I think this might be from the video exactly. And this is like, there's another quote here from this document. It's like, the exceptionally competent don't perceive how unusual their abilities are. And I just think this is so true. And somehow when I was like looking at these videos and I was like reading this stuff, I kind of recognized in my own life, especially in my professional life, sometimes I'm called in to do some work for someone and I realize I'm not going like one level down to where I'm normally working. I have to go like 20 levels down.
Yeah.
Because I'm like talking to someone who just never really thinks about these types of things. So instead of just going straight into like a high level strategy or something, which is like what I would be thinking, preparing for the meeting, I kind of have to first go into being like, okay, tell me your name. You know, like you have to start all the way at the bottom and you have to explain the concepts and the tools and everything, and before you can kind of get to the place where you're on the same page, and then you can kind of talk about what you're being brought in to actually do. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think so. Yeah. It just seems like there's so many different levels and like levels of understanding, but then also like different, so many different situations when it comes to imposter syndrome.
Yeah, and I think it's like, I think the quote you read about like you devalue your entire field of expertise because you forget that not everyone has studied what you do as much as you have. It's like such a kind of key concept. And if you're able to kind of internalize that, like, I feel like that's what happened with you and like your books and stuff, is you're able to be like, no, wait, this is what I actually like and this is what I want to talk about. And not everyone is kind of, because even if people are interested in fantasy, not everyone is able to read 67 books in 1 year, you know? And I don't know, it's like, it's something about like having it in the open that just kind of clears the path.
Yes. I definitely think being open about it has been amazing. I think so, like the two things that we've talked about, one of them was like being open about the things mm-hmm. that we think that we're imposters from, because we probably aren't. And then one of the other ones is just that like this affects so many people. What else? What were some other takeaways?
So actually, I think like, so when I read Yessi's article that she shared with us on Twitter, thank you very much for that.
And we will link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, of course. The kind of point she made was, she's editor of UK Tech News. Okay, yeah. So this is like a pretty big deal. And from her Twitter profile, she doesn't look like she's around her age. So she's doing pretty well. And what happens is like when she goes in and then she says like, oh, I'm just a writer or something, she's actually not just minimizing herself. She's minimizing the entire domain of being a journalist and being an editor of a magazine. Like, this is not an easy job she has, and they don't give these kind of jobs out to just anyone. like London is freaking competitive, and
yeah,
she's earned that place. And actually, by not just saying like, no, I am the, you know, just owning it, actually it's not just doing herself a disservice, and this is what she talks about in the article, it's devaluing everybody else. Because can you imagine how many people would love to be this editor? Like, this is not an easy job to get. I'm sure 20 people would want to take a job tomorrow. But, and that almost kind of makes it more important to just accept your place in life and that you've earned it. And she was saying how she was around all these amazing women and she felt like she didn't belong. And they kind of told her to snap out of it and be like, no, you're minimizing all of our achievements if you don't own your own achievements, because we've also had to work for our place. And you do deserve to be here because you wouldn't be here otherwise, kind of thing. And I think this is like what's really hard about the imposter syndrome is you feel it so real. But it's really important to like recognize that what you've done is valuable and good and you have the skills, and that by owning that, you're actually like being humble in this situation is not actually the right kind of course of action from everybody else's perspective.
Yes, minimizing your own achievements is not helping anyone.
No.
I love that. That is a really good takeaway.
Yeah. So do you have any other ones?
I feel like those were my main ones. I mean, I think the other one is that I've found, which I shared earlier, but I found that has been really a huge relief and has leaked over to other areas of my life, even to just deal with imposter syndrome in one area. So
that's so amazing.
Even like if you do a small one or like one that you're more comfortable starting out with, I think that could be better mm-hmm. than just like trying to tackle everything at once.
Yeah. And I think like the only other thing is like, I think it kind of works on two levels, because I think it works on this level where you find yourself in a room full of amazing people and you're like, oh my God, I don't belong here. They're going to find me out. And like all this, which is like really real, like it's super real. And I think we need to like acknowledge that this is like a super real feeling. But I think there's also like this almost other side, which is also if you have worked yourself up to a situation to find yourself in that place, maybe there's somewhere else where you're not. And so maybe you're also separating yourself from maybe parts of your past life or something. And I think that can also be really hard, because you may have peers from your past that don't get to do those things and they don't have the same access points as you do or something. And I think that is also really hard. And I don't know if imposter syndrome is the right word for that, but I just feel like it's so related and it's super easy to therefore minimize what you do because you don't want to separate yourself from your peers, basically.
Yeah, that is a really good one. I do think there's a different word for that. I don't know what it is.
I don't know exactly.
But it's like not wanting to stand out.
Yeah, and maybe the audience will know some better word for that. But this is why I haven't published this, because it's just still too all over the place. But I feel like that feeling of like not wanting to accept the light that is shining on you if you're doing something well is so related to the imposter syndrome feeling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to mention that as well.
I'm glad you mentioned it. Okay.
Okay.
So we're not going to talk about books this episode.
This episode is super long.
Yeah, but to everyone that does love hearing about the books that we're reading, I just want to encourage them to find us on Goodreads, because I've been adding a lot of people on Goodreads and interacting with them there, and it's been so much fun. What is your name on Goodreads? Do you go by Habby?
Oh, no, I think it's my Facebook name. So we'll just put a link in the
show. We're going to link to it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Do you have, what's your Goodreads name?
It is Haley Griffiths, and I am the only Haley Griffiths, spelt H-A-I-L-L-E-Y, and then G-R-I-F-F-I-S. So it's super easy to find me on Goodreads.
That's great.
I think you can even just type in Haley with the two L's, and I think I'm maybe the only – I think there might be other Haleys. I should go through and add all the other Haleys. Just to be like, hey, because my name is spelt pretty unique for
– yeah.
You know, there are a lot of different ways to spell Haley, but I don't know very many – people who spell it my way. I don't know any, actually. I think a few years ago I went through and followed all the other Haleys that spell it this way on Twitter. So it's just time to go do that on Goodreads.
So how often do people spell your name wrong?
Oh my gosh, all the time. It's I think it means I'm always grateful when people spell my name correctly, but it's also always a flag for me when people send me an email and they spell my name incorrectly that they weren't paying attention. So it's like one way for me to tell. And it's like my email is my name. So how did you spell my email correctly and then my name wrong? Like you're not paying attention. So it just kind of just show it's, I feel like I use it for like a barometer for how much someone is really paying attention to the email that they're sending me if they spell my name wrong.
Okay. I have a couple of things like that where if people, yeah, if to I got an email from somebody who should have known better, who spelled my name so wrong, I decided not to do business with them at all.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I wrote it in the last email you sent, like yeah. I sent. You could just copy paste it exactly. If you don't want to like attempt spelling it.
Don't guess.
No, exactly. And I'm like, it's just, it's so frustrating. But I agree. If somebody can't spell my name, I instant red flag.
Yeah.
If somebody's says in a conversation like, oh, I'm such a Virgo, don't worry about it. I'm like, wait, what?
I can't believe that has been said to you. That has not been said to me.
I, in surprising situation, people like reference their star sign as like an explanation for their behavior. And I'm like, I will not take anything you say seriously from this point on. Like,
I have not experienced
probably a good person.
Oh my gosh.
I will not hand over money to you.
Oh my goodness, that is hilarious. That is what is your star sign?
Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
Wait, we don't have to include this in the podcast.
No, I refuse out of principle because I'm like, no, it has no impact on my
I know when your birthday is. I can figure this out.
We can work out. It's like a little quiz for you.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Should we do the outro?
Yeah, we should do the outro. Okay.
The main thing that people should remember here is that we are using the hashtag make work work instead of just MWW now because Twitter is longer now and these don't count anyways. So use the hashtag make work work and find us on Twitter as mworkwork. We're also on Instagram as mworkwork. And yeah, feel free to send us your thoughts on books, imposter syndrome.
Oh, please send us everything you have on imposter syndrome. I'm still working on this.
Yeah.
And I would love to include some more things in there because it's not ready to be shared publicly yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Your thoughts on imposter syndrome, Trello board processes. We're up for everything. Mm-hmm. And then definitely keep sending us your job description via the tools that you use. And yeah, you can find all of our show notes with all the links for everything at makework.work.
Oh, and we'll add the bookshelf to that as well.
We will add the bookshelf. And next time, we're going to get into the double digits. We will see you in episode 10.
Yay!
I thought you were going to tell me that you were teaching them to say hi-yo and hi-yo.
Oh, we don't do the hi-yo. We only do the bio.
That's what you said about bio. And then I pointed it out. And turns out you do say that. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I stand by the bio.
Okay.
As it's so funny after you pointed that out. Like my dad says that. You know, this doesn't seem like a manly greeting. And pretty much everyone says it. Yeah.
I think it's okay that it's not a manly greeting. It can just be
no, like that.
Everyone greeting.
Just joyful. Yeah.